ready to be worshipped? Are you ready to be exalted?
Hello and welcome to episode 73 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a show that's all about talking about movies. I am Perry Nemiroff, and here are my co-hosts, Christy Puchko and Angie Han.
Hello.
Hey, everybody.
All right, so this week we are splitting up the time for two big movies, and first up is going to be Terminator Genisys, and then we're going to wrap up with Magic Mike XXL. So first, Terminator, and I have that one. Here is the IMDb synopsis. John Connor sends Kyle Reese back in time to protect Sarah Connor, but when he arrives in 1984, nothing is as he expected it to be. Accurate points for IMDb, or whoever wrote that. So I'm just going to jump into the reason that I liked this movie, which was pretty much the humor. I don't think I would have liked this movie at all if it wasn't for the fact that it threw in, like, satirical type jokes every once in a while, and every time Arnold Schwarzenegger tried to smile, I laughed and smiled too.
Yeah, he's still intensely charismatic, and you're right, there's a lot more humor in it than I think any of the trailers are selling, and that is something that I think is missing from a lot of blockbusters like this, where they're like, we have to be grim and serious, and we can't ever crack a smile or a joke. So I agree, I did appreciate that part.
Yeah, I think for me that speaks to the part of the movie that worked the best for me is everything Arnold-centric has this this self-awareness about it and this kind of like, we know what you came for, ding! And like that stuff I really enjoyed. I think every scene with Arnold in it is awesome. Less successful is kind of everything else. I like this movie, but with like a lot of caveats. Like I don't understand the plot. Like halfway through, I was just like, I kind of just wanted to chuck my notebook because I had been trying to keep place of dates and times and what they said happened in those dates and times. I was like, I don't know anymore.
No, it's a plot that works way better if you avoid thinking about it and just try your hardest. To
it also has it. The pace that can sustain it too. It's like I caught myself eventually not getting so wrapped up in everything because it was moving so quickly and I was enjoying at least the individual set pieces.
Yeah, I disagree that it moves quickly, though, just because there's so many scenes that are them explaining how the world works, which, like, I understand the opening intro I found helpful because I haven't seen any of the Terminator movies in a couple of years, and, like, I didn't really get around to rewatching them all, so I was just like, I know 1 and 2 really well. I saw 3 and 4 once and kind of forgot they exist. And the movie doesn't care. The movie's like, okay, here's everything you need to know, and they spool it out, and it kind of uncinematic but helpful first 5 to 10 minutes. But then throughout the movie, they keep being like, also another thing you should know, and also this. And it's like every time they have one of those conversations, I was just like, all right.
You know what? Honestly, it made me wish. So I feel like it's become unpopular to just straight up reboot a franchise. These days, if you're gonna reboot a franchise, you have to come up with some convoluted explanation as to why it's not really a reboot. It's a sequel. They did that with X-Men Days of Future Past. They did that with the Star Trek movie. And they're doing it with Terminator Genisys. And it takes up so much time and energy for no reason.
Reboot-quel.
Yes, reboot-quel.
I like that Perry is still saying that word. Like, it's a new language. We had, like, a 20-minute conversation the other day off of the podcast.
It was a new
friends.
Word for me. I've never
no,
used
I know,
that
but you're like,
before.
You're like, reboot cool? Like, we should be like, hooray!
I want to talk about something that I have a lot of thoughts on this movie, but they're not really about the quality of it so much as, okay, I'm just going to say, they have some really fucked up, weird, bizarre family dynamics here, okay?
It's about we can get into without spoilers, considering it's the same fucking family dynamics this franchise has been working with for the past 30
years.
So
basically John Connor sends back Kyle Reese, who he knows is his dad, and who in this movie, they have kind of a big brother, younger brother relationship with the dad as the younger brother. And John Connor has like somehow manipulated Kyle Reese into like preemptively falling in love with Sarah Connor before he even sends him back. And then like, I don't know, it's
weird.
He like
creates
and then,
his own existence by telling this little boy, like, let me tell you how cool my mom was.
Let me send you a picture of my mom so that you can masturbate to it. It's wonderful. And then meanwhile, when he gets
that's
back
that's a deleted
there,
scene. That's not in the movie.
Okay, he doesn't say masturbate, it is implied. When he gets there, when Kyle Reese finally gets into the past, he meets Emilia Clarke, Sarah Connor, who is hanging out with her robot dad, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and the whole time I was like, oh my god, this is a movie about like a guy who sent his essentially adopted younger brother to like have sex with his mom so that he could be born, and meanwhile like his like de facto grandfather is a robot.
Why isn't
that was
all
originally
that in the IMDb
him, like,
synopsis?
Why is nobody in the movie freaking out about this? That was the thing that made me so mad. I was like,
it is like a Greek mythology. It's almost like anti-Oedipal, where instead of killing his dad and fucking his mom, he wants his dad to fuck his mom, and then so that he doesn't die.
And it's, nobody in the movie like seems to appreciate how fucking weird it is. They're all just like, okay.
Well, that's also because can we talk about the acting? The acting. Now, I actually like Emilia Clarke and Arnold Schwarzenegger in this together. I thought they were really cute.
Okay.
They were
her American accent is spot.
I found her very disappointing. To me, her work in this movie kind of suggests that, you know, Game of Thrones will be her thing and that's it.
You're not alone in that. I liked her in this. I thought they had, like, I'm trying to think. It's almost like a Pete and Pete's Dragon situation where, like, Arnold's not a person in this. He's kind of a weird pet. But he is just great as a weird pet, and I loved it. And he's, like, very aware of what makes him fun, and he just goes with that. And he's just, he is capital M, capital S movie star. Then there is Jai Courtney.
Okay, surprisingly passable is my review of his performance.
I liked him. I don't know, there's just something about his on-screen presence in every movie where I'm like, I will sit and watch you. And, like, you know how I feel about him otherwise. So
yeah,
Perry's
not a fan
strange.
Otherwise.
It's a little strange that I'm okay with that, but I found him, like, I don't know, pretty charming
to be clear,
and engaging.
It's not like Perry's met Jai Courtney and, like, doesn't like him. It's just that based on stuff he puts on Instagram, we have a lot of theories.
Yeah,
but go on.
I've made up stuff. But also, especially, like, comparing him to Jason Clarke, who I found very off-putting, and not just because of who his character is. Every time he was on screen, I was kind of, like, almost,
it's
like,
weird.
Recoiling.
Yeah.
He's also a guy that in a movie that has zero sense of humor. So, you know, you're talking about how you like humor. That is a completely humorless, completely serious character.
It's, like, even before, I mean, really, can we talk about the twist? Because it's in all the marketing.
It's in all the trailers. I feel like we can talk about the twist.
We should put a slight spoiler warning.
Yeah,
if you've already seen the trailers,
spoilers.
You already know what's coming. But
if you haven't even seen the poster for the movie, though.
Fair.
Yeah.
All right. Well, even when he was human, he wasn't human. Like, I don't know what he was playing that role as, but he had no life to him whatsoever.
Yeah, my bigger issue is, like, I get that Jai Courtney is passable, but, like, his part demands someone with charisma, and, like, it's not that he's anti-charismatic. It's not like he's repulsive. It's not like Angie and I were talking about, like, he's not Taylor Kitsch and John Carter. I don't actively hate him on screen. It's not to that level. It's literally that when he is on screen, my brain is already functioning to forget he exists.
I don't know. I liked him, I think, less than Perry did and more than Chrissy did. I thought he was fine. I do think that the script does him no favors because Kyle Reese is basically like this. He's like half a step behind every other character in this movie by design. So it's not Jai Courtney's fault that he comes across as kind of a dum-dum. But because of that, like, there's just not that much room for him to, like, be creative or interesting.
It's too bad they didn't do more with J.K. Simmons' character.
Yeah,
he was,
or
like, one of the best
parts
of the movie.
Like, him and Byung-Hun Lee and Matt Smith, they have three really exciting people in this.
I totally forgot Matt Smith was in this movie.
Yeah, and
that's because
criminal.
He's barely in it. I bet that they're setting him up to be in a sequel.
Here's
only
the thing
I can guess.
They gave him a character poster, and for Doctor Who fans out there, I want you to be aware, that is criminal. He is barely in this movie. That is to get you in the door with the Doctor Who and the time travel, and then be like, oh yeah, he's barely in this movie, so fuck
you. I don't
you.
Even think he's got a full minute of screen time in
I
this movie.
I think he's in under five. I think he has less
really?
Than five lines. I think. Like, genuinely.
I think he might have six or seven.
But, like, my point is that I feel like this movie has enough interesting things that I did enjoy watching it. But when it comes to actually recommending somebody else watch it, I would say maybe wait until DVD.
I think this is, like, the classic, like, wait until DVD movie. Like, it's fine. It's kind of, it's, like, mildly entertaining. But it's really, by no definition, a must-see unless you are very invested in this franchise, and in which case you'll probably just be annoyed that they are reboot-quilling it.
Sure. Yeah, I think I'm in the fine realm on this one, too. It's kind of one of those things where it just kind of is what it is, and it's fine, but it certainly doesn't justify the continuation of the franchise whatsoever, which is kind of disappointing.
And to come out at the summer when it's like, it's summer sensation, big spectacle season, this just does not live up to that. And we all saw it in 3D IMAX and was just kind of like, I don't get what the point of that was.
All right, so, yeah, I guess that's like a lot of not-so-hot recommendations on
it's
Terminator
Genisys.
A lot of meh.
It's like that little shruggy Meh. Thing. Like, Meh.
That'll be our title for this week.
Meh. All right, on to Magic Mike.
All right. Here is the synopsis from IMDb. 3 years after Mike bowed out of the stripper life at the top of his game, he and the remaining Kings of Tampa hit the road to Myrtle Beach to put on one last blowout performance. That is an accurate synopsis, so
But it doesn't even deserve a synopsis. There's no story in this movie.
There is no story. That is the actual...
Okay, there's story. There's no stakes.
This is an accurate synopsis. It's just that there's nothing else to the story. That is literally the entire story.
It's not a competition. I kept thinking the whole movie that they're going to get there and it's going to be a competition and they're going to explain at some point why they need this money.
Yeah, that's a pretty major problem. The whole movie is about them going to the stripper convention, but like, why? What do they achieve by going?
I figured it out.
Okay, so I was telling the girls before we started that I got an offer to review the porn parody of this movie, which apparently is also coming out this weekend. I haven't seen it yet, so I can't attest to that. But I just realized this functions like a porn movie you can see in theaters with your friends because it has just enough plot that there are excuses for the sex stuff and then lots of crazy fun sex stuff. But like not so crazy that you're not like, oh God, I'm with people I know.
That's true.
Yeah, no, that's actually a pretty good way of putting it. So I wrote up a review of this, and to me, I think I said this is kind of like an afternoon at the beach. Like it's like weightless, and and everyone's having a good time, and it's so fun that it feels almost rude to be like, by the way, you have no stakes and no character development. Like
this movie means nothing.
Yeah, there's nothing happening here. And the other thing about this movie is it bends over backwards to try to please its audience. It's actually remarkable, like how far out of it's actually remarkable how far out of its way this movie goes for just like shameless, naked, literally pandering. And I loved it because the thing is the audience that they're servicing in this movie is a kind of audience that doesn't get serviced in a lot of other movies. So even though I was like, I see what you're doing there, I was like, okay, this is... And it's fun while it's doing that.
I found that kind of off-putting, though. It's like, I obviously am seeing Magic Mike because I want to see Channing Tatum and co. take their shirts off and do these crazy acts and stuff, but it almost felt like it was a step away from being a porn. Whereas Magic Mike... The first one was more like routine-based, where they were putting on a show.
Yeah.
This kind of felt a little more like, let's count how many guys can, like, shove their heads in girls' crotches.
I felt fine with that.
I don't know. It's like one of the performances that I appreciated the most in this movie was when Donald Glover serenaded that one woman.
Of course you did. I love this.
I feel like this is like a BuzzFeed quiz. His performance actually, like, suited the character, too.
It's sure.
Like, they, like, force-feed you that shit at the end, where it's like Adam Rodriguez's character with the yogurt shit, and he's like,
That was not fun for me.
That was, like, bit much.
I want to say, one, I think that what I thought was really interesting is that Joe Manganiello, is that how you say his name?
Manganiello.
He runs away with this movie because, yes. One, he has not just one, but two of the best, like, sexy scenes. The one that they tease in the trailer involving the bottle of water, that slayed me. Like, genuinely, I think it's sexy, I think it's funny, and I think it's really smart, and I think they genuinely should be teaching it in film classes because the cutaways and stuff are just dead on. And then two, and I'm not going to give it away because I feel like it's really brilliant, but there's when they hit the music transition in his final number, I was dying. I was laughing so hard. I think Angie and I were literally punching each other and yelling, what the fuck, at that point. Like,
probably. I feel like if I were a less polite person in the movie theater, I would have said it, what the fuck, about 100 more times. Because this is the kind of movie that just, about how Arnold Schwarzenegger in Terminator Genesis knows what, you know, he knows what he's doing. He knows how to service a fan and he just go for it. And this movie is that, like, that's the entire movie. It's that times 100.
Of including audience that the first movie didn't really cater to. Like, in this one, you've got more black men who are stripping, including Twitch from So You Think You Can Dance, which I had forgotten.
It's really notable. Like, they're dancing for... I'm sorry. You were talking about Twitch.
I had forgotten that Twitch was in this movie, and, like, I'm a big So You Think You Can Dance junkie, so when he showed up on screen, I looked at Angie with complete shock, and she's like, everyone else knew he was in this movie. But, like, yeah, he's in it. He's great. They have Childish Gambino, Donald Glover, if you will. And but then there's also like the women in the movie who get danced on. There are heavier women. There are women of color. There are there are older women. It's literally shape and size.
Their road trip starts at a gay bar. Then they hit a black owned pleasure palace. And then they hit like a gathering of like middle aged southern ladies. Like it's everyone that didn't get serviced by the first film. And that's what I meant when I said, like, you know, yeah, it's shameless pandering, but how refreshing to see a movie that's like, we're going to go for those people. We're not going to bother with the, you know, this movie isn't like, oh, we hate, you know, white men ages 18 to 49. That's just not their target audience, and they feel fine with that, and it was refreshing to see that.
And I have to say, like, we talked to a couple of people in that graphic, straight men from ages 18 to whatever, after the screening, and they were big fans of this movie, too. I think it's just because it's not just the taking their shirts off and the sexy stuff. This movie's genuinely funny. Like, even the scene in the trailer they show where Magic Mike is, like, pulling a flash dance and welding sexy... There's a comedic timing to that I just found really funny.
See, I like couldn't disagree more. I thought like the pacing was just awful. Like I was kind of bored for a while. There was so much dead air in between the performances. And I'll say I think like don't get too hyped about Joe Manganiello's gas station scene because I think a couple people oversold that to me. Because when we hit that, I was expecting to be like, holy shit. And I was just like, you know, this is a cute, clever scene. And like, I liked it. I liked the payoff at the end of that scene. It did make me smile, but I wasn't particularly wowed by it. But the thing that had me absolutely floored about this movie was how fucking ugly it was. I don't think I've seen a more poorly shot movie, and it's freaking Steven Soderbergh. I don't know what he was thinking with the...
He shot and edited this movie,
and I think it is, like, one of the worst
jobs. Well, we should be clear, he didn't direct it, though. That's Gregory Jacobs.
No, but he still shot the movie, and he edited it, and I don't know what he was thinking with the lighting. There, I cannot even begin to count the number of times in this movie where someone is talking, and we are on somebody else's reaction for no reason whatsoever. While I was taking notes during this movie, I started writing those down, and it started to catch my eye when they were all in the ice cream truck together, and they were talking, and there are so many singles on Matt Bomer. Why?
Yeah, I have a lot of feelings in that.
Why?
Scene.
I don't really know why. And then but like they were hyping that plot up. Like it was going to define the movie and I kept waiting for it, you know, for that to be a big deal. Another major issue I had was how dark everything was. There were at least 10 conversations where two people were talking and I could not see their faces. And people in this movie have very pretty faces. I want to see them and I couldn't see them.
I did think that was funny in the introduction of the Amber Heard character, who is the Jay Courtney of this movie.
Oh, boy. She needs to go away.
She's the Cody Horn. She is to this movie with Cody Horn.
She is better than Cody Horn, but let's get real. That's where we're...
You know what, Christy? I'm just going to put my foot down. That is an insult to Jay Courtney, because he is better in Terminator than Amber Heard is in XXL.
Not only is Amber Heard's character, like... totally forgettable. There's no point. They could have pulled her out of the movie and I never would have noticed.
Totally agree.
She just brings nothing to that either. It's almost like I feel like Amber Heard went to that set and was like, I'm going to play around and be a Magic Mike. I don't care about character. I'm just going to do whatever the fuck I want. I get a free lap dance out of it.
It does feel like it's like one character deficit that Magic Mike has, that he is attracted to the most uninteresting women in the world.
He's attracted to women who are like actively dour. I don't know why, but that's his type for some reason.
She is the worst.
She is. She's terrible. Also, she eats cake like a savage. That was a detail that really made me angry.
Because
she's like, at one point she goes off to sulk and be by herself because, I don't know, guys are douchebags. But whatever. She's eating the cake, and it's a red velvet cake, and like, I started thinking of Orange is the New Black, so I laughed. Anyway, but she's eating this red velvet cake, and they cut away, and she has an entire, like, cake plate and is eating the entire cake with a fork. Like, this is not your home. You are a guest here. You don't just, like, you're an animal.
That was a problem with a lot of the characters. She's the worst offender, where I think she's one of the most unlikable people, where I don't understand why she has any friends. But part of the reason I love Magic Mike so much was that even though all of the supporting guys didn't get much screen time and I wanted to know more about them, they still came across as, like, nice guys that I'd want to hang out with, too. And here, it's like, I don't understand why they're such dicks.
What? Oh, no! I thought that they were such good friends. I thought that, like, one of the things I loved about this movie is that everyone seems, like, so happy to be hanging out together.
They just seemed, like, such, like, full of themselves assholes. And I don't know. I didn't like how they behaved the large majority of the movie, and I found that to be, like, a major turnoff.
Oh, wow. That was so fun.
Maybe this movie just needed more Alex Pettifer. Maybe the reason I liked them so much in the first movie was because that he was such a dick, it made them seem like better guys.
I thought you were saying you liked him in the first movie, God, and I was like, no. Perry, friendship over.
I
love
the first movie, and I believe I put it in my top 10 of that year. But Alex Pettifer was the worst thing in that movie.
I'm really glad they wrote him and Cody Horn out. And it's like literally you get a line of dialogue about each where it's like, all right, fuck those characters.
Yeah. All right. So we should wrap up. But in sum, I actually think Magic Mike is just like the perfect like mindless summer movie. Just go with your friends, laugh, have a good time, maybe be a little drunk. I think it's great for that. I thought it was a lot of fun.
Go ahead, Perry.
Yeah. I mean, I'm very disappointed by this just because I like the whole gimmick of it. It excites me, and I was very much looking forward to it. And the thing that blew my mind with the first is that it embraced that gimmick, but it was something more at the same time. This is not more. This is the gimmick, and that is it. And if you're okay with that, fine, go see it. I had fun, but I'm still seriously disappointed.
I understand that. I came down on the other side where the first Magic Mike, this is the Magic Mike I wanted to see the first time. And, like, I don't really care about the plot and stuff like that. I thought this was really fun, and I almost thought it was willfully, like, purposefully silly how it chose to have no stakes.
Mm-hmm.
I liked it. I don't know. I know that the plot is dumb, and I just don't care.
It's the feel-goodiest of the feel-good movies.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, good luck figuring out if you should see these two movies this week, because we have been so crystal clear on them.
Yeah. I gotta say, I think if you're gonna go see something this weekend, Magic Mike is a blast.
Go see Inside Out again. All right. That is a wrap on episode 73 of Popcorn and Prosecco. You can find us all over the place. We have our YouTube channel. We have popcornprosecco.com. We are on Facebook where you can like us. We are on Twitter at Popcorn Prosecco. And then please go to iTunes, subscribe, and also rate us because that is very helpful. And you can find three of us all over the internet as well. Christy, you want to take it first?
Yeah. You can find me on Twitter at Christy Puchko, and I write all over the internets. So you can find my career highlights at decadentcriminals.com.
Angie?
You can find me on Twitter at AJHAN, and I write for slashfilm.com.
And you can catch my writing on collider.com, and my Twitter handle is pnemiroff. So thank you guys so much for watching, and we'll see you next time.
I'll be back.